The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
More with Bill Myers.
Good morning. It is Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday, 12 minutes after 6, joining the conversation at 770-5633. You got a pebble in your shoe, or maybe even just a pearl of positivity. Yeah, we could kind of make it a dual theme sort of situation. I love that term. You can have the pebble in your shoe or a pearl of positivity. What do you have? 770-5633. Now, there is an interesting development. City of Medford did make a change. You may have heard that on the NBC5 forecast, not the forecast, but the news just a moment ago, about a change downtown on Main Street in Oakdale, where a woman and child were struck by a car crossing in the crosswalk down there. And they ended up blocking out a parking space there by the corner. Apparently, I've noticed that a lot of times in which you have parking that goes so far up the street or so close to the intersection that if you're pulling up and you're wanting to turn, you can't really see around. And I hate to put it this way because, hey, I wouldn't mind one of these trucks too. But the massive American truck of today, that, you know, Eric Peter is absolutely right when he talks about the incredible size or the growth that has been going on with the size of American trucks and frankly, foreign trucks that are sold in America. Nobody buys smaller trucks any longer. Everything has to be bigger and better, apparently. But a half-ton truck of today is, I swear, about 3 feet taller than a half-ton truck from the late 1990s, although they had the same equivalent towing capability and all these other sort of things, and just big vehicles in general, big SUVs. And I understand this problem is you park up by the intersection, and especially if you're in a car, you're a little bit lower and you're not in the SUV or you're not in the, you know, 8 foot tall or 9 foot tall truck, you're not going to see necessarily what you're turning into real well. And so what the city of Medford did was ended up dashing and painting out the parking ability of that space on the corner. So that was a good thing. Hopefully that'll help prevent some of that stuff. But I could see a lot of other places in town that could use those kind of rules, because the larger that the vehicles have gotten, and you can argue about whether they've got... No, I don't think you can argue whether they've gotten larger or not. They have. They definitely have gotten larger and heavier. But the larger they've gotten, the harder they are to look around or see around when they're parking on the city streets. Of course, the Greens would say, well, all we have to do is get rid of vehicles, and then we won't need to have you parking on the city street. And then you just need to get on one big vehicle, and that would be the wheels on the bus go round and round from RVTV. And then you can end up, RVTD rather, and you can then enjoy the diversity of the people and the smells of Southern Oregon. Oh, just having a little bit of fun. If we can't have a little bit of fun with that. Oh, speaking of diversity and the smells and the sounds and the wonderful changes which have happened to our cities, especially with the Ninth Circuit and the ruling on homelessness. Of course, the homelessness grants pass lawsuit ended up making it to the Supreme Court yesterday. I did not have time to go through the 2.5 hours of the oral arguments. It was supposed to have been an hour, and it turned into 2.5. I mean, that really says something. The fact that it was going to be an hour and 2.5, that almost never, ever happens. And everybody dancing around, I guess the one concern that I had is when you see them, the various justices, trying to bend themselves into contortions about trying to make homeless a protected class. As if somehow a person exists and is just homeless, rather than as the lawyer from Grants Pass was trying to get across, or representing the city of Grants Pass was trying to get across, that what we were doing is punishing behaviors. But the liberal justices were trying to take behaviors, things that people were doing then, and translating it or transferring it somehow into this is just a characteristic. This is what they are. It's what these people are. Well, it's kind of like, trans people, trans woman, which means a fake woman. It's actually a man masquerading. Well, the man says that he is a woman and he is a woman. But City of Grants Pass says we weren't punishing people for their class. We were punishing the fact that they were behaving, they were sleeping, they were defecating, they were urinating, they were doing everything where they weren't supposed to be. And then other people within the court and the arguments are going back and forth about, if you have no other choice, where should you? Because, a human need is a sleep. Sleep is a human need and it has to be done. And if you don't have a place to go, where do you go? Well, I guess I would then say you go to the Gospel Rescue Mission. Oh, but why can't you go to the Gospel Rescue Mission? Because the Gospel Rescue Mission won't let you do anything and everything you want. There are actual rules. So the courts have more or less said that unless we accommodate people who are not to have any rules, then you have to just let them sleep wherever and take over your parks. I'll be really interested to find out what happens with this decision. We're all going to be watching this. My concern is that the Supreme Court's going to kind of waffle and go wishy-washy on it. Well, we're going to do this, and Oregon has a law on homelessness and this and that and the other. I really can't say. But I hope to get some more legals who have been able to analyze that oral argument, the oral arguments, much more thoroughly than I ever could, not looking at it from a point of view. Because, see, I'm just looking at things from a sensible point of view rather than what has the law or what have attorneys in the Supreme Courts and other places said about the law, which often is not common sense. You know, you'll have these precedents that are set. It could be just pretty nasty. It's just like the Constitution. It's not what the Constitution says. It's what the Supreme Court has said about the Constitution, which is what's considered the Constitution, which is a real problem. And I think if I were to have my benevolent dictatorship, this would be my pebble in the shoe Tuesday, would be to have a reset and to destroy precedent when it comes to the Constitution. In other words, you have to go back to the beginning. The Constitution means what it says, not what the Supreme Court has said about it over the last couple hundred years, you know, that kind of thing. Well, we can have those kind of arguments if you want. Interestingly enough, though, back to the homelessness arguments in the Supreme Court, the Gospel Rescue Mission of Grants Pass ended up putting out a cartoon yesterday on YouTube. And it is brilliant. It's called Bristol and the Yard Invaders. It's about 11, 12 minutes. I'm not going to play all of it, but I want you to hear the fairy tale. And I have it up on my Facebook page. I'll put a link to it on my Facebook page. I know Mike Jones put it up there yesterday, and he has it on the Facebook comments that I had, okay? Oh, by the way, Facebook Live not working today for some reason. They're talking about permissions in Facebook, and there was no way I could figure it out before I came on. So no Facebook Live today, but everything else is working, okay? But anyway, here's a little bit from Bristol and the Yard Invaders. And I can't help but think that this is, they're talking Sarah Bristol, but still.
Once upon a time, in the small community of Grants Pass, Oregon, there was a woman named Bristol. Bristol was a single mum with three young children, Sarah, Blake, and Lily. She had worked very hard to afford a nice home with a nice backyard for her children to safely play in. This is no small achievement, since she lived in Oregon, where housing prices are very high. They didn't have much, but Bristol and her little family were happy and proud of their little home.
Isn't that sweet?
Early one morning, little Blake woke Bristol in quite a panic. "Mummy, who are those people in our backyard?" Alarmed, Bristol got up and went to the sliding glass door and was gobsmacked by the sight of three large tents surrounded by what looked like piles of random litter and debris. "What are you people doing in my yard?" Bristol yelled out of the window. A wrinkled-faced older woman stood up from behind one of the tents, looking as if she was pulling up her pants, and yelled back, "We have nowhere else to go. It's not our fault that we're in this condition. And by the way, could you spare some toilet paper and a couple of cigarettes?" Bristol just stood there in shock and outrage, having a hard time finding the words for the audacity of what she was seeing.
Yeah, and that's just the beginning of it. Bristol and the Yard Invaders, and there are other people that are characters that seem to be loosely named after Grants Pass city councilors, like there's a neighbor Valerie and various other people within that. But it's going down the outrage of the homelessness takeover of Bristol's backyard. And quite interesting. And how the progressive residents of Grants Pass were coming forth and calling anybody who was complaining about this. Well, you know, they are Nazis. Well, of course, you'd expect Nazis to be upset about people going to the bathroom in their backyard. Of course, only Nazis would be upset about that. It's well worth it. It's well worth the 11 minutes. I just posted it on my Bill Maier Show Facebook page. Like I said, no Facebook Live today, but I can still post on that for some reason, okay? We'll get the camera fixed, hopefully, by tomorrow. Bristol and the Yard Invaders. It's quite good, actually. Gospel Rescue Mission of Grants Pass ended up putting out this fable. And, of course, the Prague hissy fitters are already coming out. One of them called Invisible People says, I must have skimmed right over the chapter in the Bible where Jesus proclaims, go forth and create cartoons that stoke the flames of neighborhood disdain. Surely it was just a few pages away from love thy neighbor as thyself. How did I miss that? And I responded to the troll. I said, you do realize the mission has homes for the invisible people, but they must follow rules. See, we're not supposed to talk about that. Having rules is for other people. Other people, people with assets who pay the taxes for civilized society. There are not supposed to be rules for everybody else because, well, as you heard it, they can't help who they are. They can't help it. They just became homeless. And they were having a lot of those arguments yesterday in the Supreme Court. Well, you know, these people can't help it. Nobody forced you to become a drug addict. Nobody forced you to go there. Everyone's supposed to be responsible, except the people who are responsible for their behavior. They're told they're not. It's not possible to be responsible for their behavior. So, interesting times for sure. Let me go to the phones here on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Hi, who's this? Good morning. You've been holding for a few minutes. Welcome.
Yeah, this is Vicky.
Hey, Vicky. How you doing today? What's on your mind?
Where are you?
How are you?
I'm good.
Great.
I'm listening to the birds and just enjoying the morning with my coffee.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty ironic that the lawyers are saying this is who these people are. Well, no, this is who they became. This is not who they are. They were somebody before they decided to be homeless and
Indeed.
Not follow rules.
Indeed.
You know, it's just, the argument is so ridiculous. It's like, this is who they became. They weren't always like this. And for whatever reason, you could tell people that actually lose their job and they're in dire need with children or no children, and they do try and better themselves and go out and try and find work. Those are the people that are should be considered homeless. The other people that decide they don't want rules and they don't want to have to work and they want everything for free, those are transients. Those are people who would rather have someone else pay their way than actually stand up, get clean. And
we used to know how to deal with such individuals that lived that way. And now there's such a disorder in society that we're told that these are the individuals that are supposed to hold sway and control the agenda and the narrative, for that matter.
Well, they want us to be sympathetic towards them. And as humans, we do have a certain amount of sympathy.
Yes.
For, you know, yeah, they're drug addicts.
That's I'm sympathetic. We're sympathetic that that you have gone down this really self-destructive path. And maybe, and we should be more focused on getting you out of this self-destructive path. But then the people that are out there in the nonprofit world here, as you well know, Vicky, quite often make their money by making sure they have as many self-destructive people as possible, because that means more clients and that means more grant stream money for them.
Well, the thing about nonprofit, they should rename that, because it's all profit. I mean, it's not. It's back in the day when I was a kid growing up, nonprofit was people donated to your cause.
A charity.
Help.
It was a charity.
Now it's a million-dollar industry.
It's a million-dollar industry with $150,000 CEOs and all that. Yep, I'm with you on that, and you're right. That has been. But you see, the thing is, the tax code, of course, has created this immense privilege. And businesses ended up going, okay, where can we go to have a competitive advantage? And so the nonprofit world for many was that. Even look at Asante. Now, Asante, the healthcare system, huge healthcare system, same with Providence and such, they're considered nonprofit organizations, right?
But, oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
But of course, there's hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars that are funneled through these places over the years. And it's hard. It's not exactly like it's a charity. For the most part, the doctors and the CEOs and everybody's getting paid. Everybody's getting paid. Okay. All right, Vicki, I appreciate the call. I think you get that. You know, I continuing back on the there were protests in Ashland yesterday, and they were waving signs in Ashland. And I mentioned this on my social media last night, and they were waving signs saying that housing is a human right. Housing is a human right. This was something that was brought up, and these were people in solidarity with the homeless community. Now, I didn't notice any of these demonstrators taking any homeless people home with them, because the idea, I guess, was to be waving the sign and having everybody knowing that you were on the right side of history, apparently. But something I would hope that you would consider, and maybe get other people that don't think conservatively to think about this. When people talk about housing being a human right, a true right, though, is something that you have, that we have, that no one else has to do anything for you or work on your behalf in order for you to have a right. That's a right. We, at least if, according to a plain language reading of the Constitution, have a right to free speech. It means that we can speak freely. It doesn't mean that someone has to listen to you. And it doesn't mean that that government can't have any kind of restriction on it whatsoever. You know, that kind of thing. But for the most part, government cannot censor your speech. It's not that the government has to promote your speech. You have a right to say it. You do it on your own. And when you have these people at Ashland that are talking about, housing is a human right, are they implying then that they have a right then to seize land wherever and grab construction crews and material, steal material from Home Depot or Hughes Lumber, or any of the other places, and since it's a human right after all, and also enslave construction crews, take them off a paying job. Listen, my housing is a human right. You better damn well build it for me. See what I'm getting at? Housing is not a human right. It's a human need, but a human need is not necessarily a human right. But, you know, these are the big-hearted Marxists with empty heads that have been driving a lot of Oregon policy. Food is a human need, but do you have a human right to food? That means that you technically could be able to enslave the farmer to give you food because it is my human right. Well, no, it's a human need. It's a human need because otherwise, since it is a human need, you could just walk into Winco, walk into Safeway, walk into Sherm's, walk into wherever, and then just to take the food off the shelf without paying for it, because after all, this is my human need. It's my human right. Yeah, it's actually a need, but they call it a right, right? Yeah. It's something to think about, isn't it? Be careful of a world in which human needs are turned into human rights by the Marxists. This is the Bill Meyer Show. With so many working and doing business from home, it's good to know there's a community business center to help. A Street Print and Parcel is a one-stop shop for everything from large format printing and scanning to blueprints, architectural plans, and shipping. Their Studio 10 expansion offers passport photos, photo mounting, fine art scanning, art reproductions, signs and banners, negative and slide scanning, canvas prints, and so much more. Located in Ashland on A Street across from Ashland Hardware. Their motto, we create it, print it, pack it, and ship it. A Street Print and Parcel and Studio 10.
Freedom, prosperity, safety. These are some of the values that made Oregon great. Dr. Noah Robinson will work to preserve our treasured Oregon values.
As your state senator, I'll stand up to the Democrats and lobbyists in Salem, continuing the fight for your parental rights, promoting limited government, and protecting unborn lives.
Conservative, principled, independent. Vote Noah Robinson for Oregon Senate. Paid for by Noah Robinson for Oregon Senate. ID 23412.
When concrete around your home sinks, it's never pretty, and it's usually not safe either. Terra Firma has the solution. We can inject safe, expanding foam through a hole smaller than a dime and lift existing concrete sidewalks, steps, patios, and more. Best of all, there's no mess, and you can walk or drive on the repair in just 15 minutes. So for a solution to sinking concrete at a fraction of the cost of replacing it, call Terra Firma for a safe, clean concrete repair.
Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is your one-stop accessory and protection shop, offering quality products like Lydex spray-on bedliners, undercoating, and truck, Jeep, and SUV accessories. Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is now your premier source for overlanding, off-road, and outdoor lifestyle products. So what are you waiting for? Stop on by and get prepared for your next adventure. They're located at 4840 Airway Drive, just off Vilas Road in Central Point. Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, your department of adventure.
Hi, this is Mark from Jay Austin, and I'm on KMED and KCMD.
633, just mentioning that their protest in Ashland yesterday in solidarity with the homeless community in, you know, the Supreme Court arguments, the Grants Pass case yesterday, talking about housing as a human right. And I wanted to talk with Chris in Central Point. Chris, you wanted to weigh in on that because they're calling housing a human right. Right. Because you have a right. You have a right to housing, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Not a need. So how are you going to take this then if you're going to go down that road?
Well, I figured if they're thinking that it's a human right and here in the United States, we have a right to bear arms. If I could look forward to those folks in Ashland purchasing my next firearm.
Well, yeah. Why not? Because, I mean, after all, if it's a right, if they can force someone to build them homes and give them to people, we can force them then to build firearms and give them to you or just purchase them. We'll just have them purchase them. We'll just seize their wealth. That's how we'll do it. We'll go about it, seize their wealth, and buy firearms. Great. What could go wrong?
Yeah, I'd be willing to get rid of some of them Teslas, and they could fund some of my new hunting gear and firearms for the next couple of years.
Yeah. And once again, be careful what you call a right. I mean, you get what I'm getting at, though. You know, a right.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, a right is something that somebody else doesn't have to do anything for you to have. You know, and if you're talking about anything else, it's just a need that you're wanting somebody else to pay for. It's not that it's not important. That housing is not important. By the way, thank you for the call. Appreciate that, though. Ranger's here. Hey, Ranger, go ahead. Welcome. What's up?
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes. This problem would completely go away in 30 days if they would put the homeless shelter on the California border. About the third time they had to hitchhike back to town, they would go south, and you would have no more problem.
Well, Ranger, I mean, that sounds really good, but something even simpler than building a shelter on the border would be just to be able to just remove precedent and enforce vagrancy laws as we used to for, well, I don't know, the last couple hundred years, okay? But point well taken. All right, Gene, you wanted to weigh in. Go ahead.
This is not so crazy. And I would call an Adam and Eve. God gave Adam and Eve two fig leaves. That's what they got. And there were cavemen living at that time, too. And Grants Pass is known for cavemen.
Well, we just need to open up more cave space then, right?
Yeah, or you can just open mine.
Hey, wait a minute. It's perfect. Wait a minute. Pam Marsh and all the other Marxists ended up getting $600,000. They gave it to the Oregon Caves. There we go. Move the homeless to the Oregon Caves.
There
we go. That's where you go. It's safe. It's secure. No one's going to go get them. Yeah. All right. And we have taxpayer loot already going into it. All right. Thanks, Gene. On that note, Dr. Carol Lieberman joins me talking about the Trump trial. She's a forensic psychiatrist. Which jurors are likely to convict or not convict the former president? We'll talk about that coming up.
Sweetwater Sanitation are your experts in the sanitation business. With over 20 years of providing septic services in Southern Oregon, Sweetwater Sanitation gets the job done the right way. Sweetwater Sanitation can inspect, service, repair, and pump your septic tank so you can focus on enjoying time with friends and family and not a septic disaster. Give them a call at 541-821-1426 or check them out online at swsmodoc.com. Sweetwater Sanitation, their service is the difference.
Hey ladies, come in and take a look at our Anna Zuckerman collection at Father and Son Jewelry.
It certainly is stunning. The jewelry has been worn by actresses on the red carpet at the Oscars.
Ladies can look like a million bucks and no one can tell the difference between the synthetic lab-created stones and gems. And the settings are breathtaking.
Come be dazzled by the Anna Zuckerman collection at Father and Son Jewelry on Jackson between Riverside and Central.
News sponsored by Caveman Heating and Air. It's the climate, and we control it. Call Caveman Heating and Air at 541-476-0009 or cavemanheating.com.
Good morning. I'm Natalie Cerna with your NBC5 Morning News Update. Community members and shelter volunteers will be holding a forum to discuss the future of the Jackson County Animal Shelter. The forum will be at 5:30 tonight at the Medford Library. The public forum is being organized by private citizens hoping to discuss the current conditions of the Jackson County Animal Shelter, as well as possible solutions other than the county's idea of creating an animal shelter service district. Then the city of Grants Pass and the family of a man who was shot and killed by police have reached a settlement in a wrongful death lawsuit. Attorneys on both sides negotiated a $3 million settlement for the family of 48-year-old Mark Caldwell. Caldwell was shot and killed at his home in December of 2022, while police were searching for a suspect in his West Home Avenue neighborhood. A grand jury ruled the shooting was justified, saying Caldwell was armed when he was shot. Then Providence Medical Center in Portland is extending its medical waste recycling program to Medford. Starting May 9th, Medford's Providence facilities will be adopting a new way to dispose of their medical waste. In partnership with one of their medical supply companies, the hospital will have bags of recycling picked up during their shipments, which will then be hand-sorted up in Portland. For local news anytime, head on over to our website, KOBI5.com. That's a look at your morning headlines. For NBC5 News, I'm Natalie Cerna.
So, I've been thinking about how nimble and responsive Fontana Roofing is.
And?
Humor me. Close your eyes.
Okay.
Picture, if you will, an unassuming but charming home pending for sale. Suddenly, the tenuous boundary between buyer and seller is a paper-thin, worn membrane of composite material. Beyond lies a harmonious transaction in ruin. Ladies and gentlemen, you make a tenuous phone call and enter the wondrous dimension of customer satisfaction. Next stop, the re-roof zone.
The re-roof zone? Why don't we just say that Fontana Roofing, thanks to their long employee retention, have experienced teams of expert, efficient roofers that are often able to react to our customers' unique situations and turn their jobs around fast without sacrificing quality.
Okay, but I kind of wanted to work in how we have the ability to bend the fabric of space and time.
Let's just let our customers assume that.
Fair enough.
If time is of the essence, visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
106.3 KMED, 99.3 KCMD. This is the Bill Myers Show.
And she is, well, I think she's a she. I'm not a biologist, but I'm pretty sure I can identify her as one. It's Dr. Carol Lieberman, MD, known as American Psychiatrist, three-time Emmy-honored media psychiatrist, appearances as a psycho-socio a political commentator on top media outlets everywhere, from Oprah on. Where, by the way, what's it like being on Oprah? Were you well trained on Oprah? I'm always kind of curious about that, Doctor.
Yes.
Welcome back.
Yes. Hi. Thank you. Yes, I was. I was actually Oprah's Dr. Phil before she met Dr. Phil, and so I was on a number of times. And yes, she was always very nice, and it was very good. Being on the show, very interesting.
Yeah, she's very nice, also very rich. Yeah. Now, you are, I don't know if you're very rich, not my business, but you are known as the terrorist therapist. You help people keep calm and carry on since 9/11. Out of curiosity, have you been, before we get into the Trump trial, have you been involved in helping any of the Jews who were attacked on October 7th of last year? Just curious if you've been involved in any of that.
Yes, to some degree I have, you know, by either people who have come to America or people who are in Israel who I've been in contact with. Mm-hmm. But I'm planning actually on going over there myself.
Glad to hear that. Doctor, I look forward to hearing more about that, and you can tell us the story then at that point. So, President Trump on trial, today's day two, and gosh, he's just being smacked about the head by the legal system. I can't call it the justice system. I have to call it the legal system. Just a process at this point. And what can you tell us, given that you have been, you know, in fact, even your website, expertwitnessforensicpsychiatrist.com, you pay attention to juries quite closely. What can you tell us about the jury selection process for former President Trump?
Yes. Well, first of all, this is a kangaroo court. Trump is walking into a lion's den. It is a setup, just like so many of his other trials. You know, it's called lawfare. It's a political way of trying to get rid of a candidate never before has it been done to this extent, but they are trying to tie him up in all these court cases, one, so he can't be on the campaign trail, but also to blacken his name. And, you know, to some degree, it's been working the opposite way because people are realizing that he is being attacked, you know, that these are false kinds of charges and, I mean, all kinds of crazy stuff, like with Fannie Willis, for example.
Right.
I mean, it's just all kinds of things. And this trial is perhaps the worst, this current trial.
What makes this trial worse than some of the other ones? And, you know, and I know... And you're right. I think that all the attacks in some ways have been strengthening him, but perhaps you could just say, is there at some point where the attacks finally start sticking and then it becomes more of a problem?
Well, I think the main problem with that, well, first of all, yes, I think this one might really be because of the jury and because of the judge and because of, I think this one might have very far-reaching effects. But just in general, you know, trial after trial after trial, case after case, Trump is looking, it makes me very sad to look at him. Mm-hmm. Because clearly he's looking a little worse for wear. This is very stressful. Not to say that, you know, that this would impact his ability to be a great president were he to be elected. But it's just sad to see him going through all of this. This current trial, first of all, this trial is a setup in a lot of ways. The way that they pick the jury is a setup. This is a jury that if he somehow manages to get convicted, it'll be a miracle. If he manages to not get convicted, it'll be a miracle. And we can go into that a little bit more. But also, this is sort of a act one of two acts. The point of this, because if he gets convicted, it would be a felony, or it could be several felonies, and there is a bill that is being introduced by Democrats called the Disgraced Former Protectees Act.
Oh.
And what it is it is a bill, you know, it hasn't been adopted yet, but it's a bill that is recommending that if someone is convicted of a felony and if they have to spend some time in jail or prison, then they will have their Secret Service detail taken away from them.
Oh.
So that's really the point of this.
Oh, yeah. This is just a custom crafted bill by the Marxists then. In other words, here's how we really get Donald Trump killed for good. Really?
Exactly. That's the bottom line. How to get him assassinated. So the first step is this trial, you know, to get him convicted and sentenced. And then the next step is to take away his Secret Service. So this is so important. And yet, the judge did not allow enough time for voir dire, the time that the attorneys select the jurors. And that can make a break or break a case. I do some jury consulting as a forensic psychiatrist and expert witness, and there's a whole science to it, a science and an art to it. Like figuring out which jurors would be more favorable to whichever side you're on. And, you know, there are some things that are a little easier, like, or a little simpler to think of one way or the other, which is, for example, particularly in this trial, which has to do with Stormy Daniels and hush money and all that. So one might say that it's better to have men than women in a very general sense. And he does have 7 men and 5 women, but that's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, but 7 men and 5 women in New York City that now hates him.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Mm. I mean, selecting a jury, first of all, they should have tried to get it out of New York, which I don't know that would have been, they would have been able to do that. But, I mean, they wouldn't, like with the system, certainly in New York. Yes, they start with a jury that is most likely biased against him just from where they live and past cases, you know, what they've discovered from past jurors and all of that. But so then it gets a lot more complicated. I mean, another way to look at it is what news, where they get their news. So, for example, there is one man who is the foreperson who said he gets his news from the Daily Mail, which is a kind of pro-Trump paper outlet. But you know, then he had other things that weren't as good. There were some women who admitted, like this one woman who talked about how selfish he was. Some of the jurors took advantage of their time to speak when they were being voir dired, when they were being questioned, to say horrible things about Trump.
This was like their chance. This was their chance to get a lick in, right? That kind of
exactly.
Thing. Wow.
Exactly. And Trump had to sit there and listen to all this. And I think the worst one or the most vocal one, you know, who said the worst things, doesn't mean she was the worst one just because she said it outright. I think that there are people who hid what they really feel, you know, who pretended to be less against Trump so that they could get on the jury. But she talked about how selfish he was and how he's not her cup of tea. all kinds of, I mean, that doesn't sound, she just went on and on. And
obviously she has daddy problems, I think, is what's going on.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. But by the time they got to her, apparently Trump's lawyers had used all their strikes. Like, lawyers only get a certain number of strikes, a certain number of potential jurors who they can say, no, we don't want them.
Well, that tells you just how bad the jury is in that case. If you run out of strikes that quickly, it just tells you how bad the pool is.
Hmm. Yes, absolutely. And so she's on the jury. I mean, there were people also who didn't say quite as many things against him, but they said some things, and they said, but I can be fair and impartial. I mean, the problem is that even some of these people, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's say they think they can be fair and impartial. Well, the problem is there's a thing called unconscious bias, and that means that even though you really may be honestly trying to be fair and unbiased, that you have such unconscious feelings towards the defendant, Trump in this case, that you can't be fair and unbiased. No matter how you try, you know, how much you wish and try and double think, you can't, because you really have deep down feelings, memories of things, you know, that he said or did that you hated. Just all kinds of reasons that you might not like him. Some things, you know, may not even be true that you thought that he stood for, but you think they are, and therefore, you know, you're going to be swayed a certain way.
Yeah, you know, Dr. Lieberman, it's interesting. We know that you have a right, constitutional right, to be judged by a jury of your peers, and are we seeing that break down when you have a high-profile defendant such as a former president? Because you're thinking about, all right, a jury of your peers. Well, technically, maybe it should only be former presidents and wealthy people.
Right.
You know, you start, you know what I'm getting
right.
at? You know, that sort of thing, or people who are celebrities, because there's nobody in that juror box that's truly a peer of former President Trump. Do you agree
that's
on that?
That's right. Absolutely. They didn't even make an effort to try. Like, yes, there's nobody who's a president in the jury box, but they could have tried to find similar sorts of things. You know, of course, if they couldn't do it politically, I mean,
right.
I mean, the judge wouldn't let them do it politically. And the judge himself is seems to be very much against Trump. Now, the only thing that could be hoped for is that one juror will have strength in their belief and the strength to be able to fight off the other jurors to not go along with a guilty verdict.
Boy, you'd have to have a will and spine of steel to resist that kind of peer pressure, I'll bet, when it comes to former
yes.
President Trump.
Yes, yes.
I've only served on a jury one time in my life, Doctor, and I did that for a malpractice case about a year and a half ago. And it's really interesting. Our jury was well chosen and truly about as unbiased as I thought. And I remember that all of us thought that we were the only one that wanted to vote in that one particular direction.
Uh-huh.
We voted for the doctor instead of for the plaintiff. And we all thought we were the only one. And then we found out that we were all going the same way. But, you know, we had no idea. You know, we had no idea. So, I mean, it tells you how well the jury system can work when it is done properly. Okay?
Yes.
But not here. I mean, is that grounds for appeal or a mistrial? How do you think something like this plays out? I know that the legal world's not necessarily your bailiwick. I mean, you're examining the jurors and such, but where do you see it?
No. I mean, I testify as an expert witness. In mm-hmm. fact, I was supposed to be testifying today. They settled the case, you know, at the last minute yesterday.
Oh, they knew you were coming in. We better settle fast. Dr. Carroll's coming,
well,
right?
Actually, it's okay because it would have been, I still would have been able to talk to you because, you know, it's 6:53 in the morning in California, so mm-hmm. I wouldn't have been in court yet.
Right.
But I've seen this. In fact, you know, it's very interesting when you're testifying on the witness stand and you're supposed to be looking at the jury the whole time, you know, to sort of connect with them, which is not easy because it's one of the attorneys, either the attorney who retains you or the opposing attorney who hates you. They are asking you the questions. So at looking at the jury, it's very interesting. You can see sort of, you know, they try to not show any expression, mm-hmm. but you can kind of see what they're thinking sometimes or think you see. And it can be very unnerving, you know, if you think they're thinking, oh, she's full of it.
Yeah.
or if they're nodding their head, you know, that's encouraging. But anyhow, yes. I mean, there have been jury verdicts recently in particular that have been, you know, where you think, aha, the system really does work. So, yes, but, you know, of course, this is the first case against a president.
Yeah, and this was totally politicized. That's just it. The case that I served in was not a political case. It was, you know, it's a routine thing that didn't have any big news important. You know, everybody's put a thumb on the scale of justice in this case in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that and that's the challenge here. There's no way. I guess the real question is, can you get a fair trial? Is that why is there a trial in the first place? Because because even the feds decided there was nothing to do here. There was nothing worth prosecuting. But needless to say, here he finds himself right now. It's a real travesty.
Yes. A lot of legal scholars are saying there is no case here. And, you know, really, Michael Cohen, who's written books based upon his experiences with Trump, and Stormy Daniels, who's also written a book. I mean, they're out for themselves. And really, of course, they're not the ones who decided to bring the case. I mean, they couldn't have done it by themselves.
Right.
But, you know, it's so political. It's people, it's attorneys, it's judges, you know, who, I mean, like the last case, the E. Jean Carroll case. This woman who alleges that Trump raped her and Bergdorf Goodman's. I mean, it was ridiculous ridiculous. This is so many years ago and no witnesses. And if, you know, if I've been to Bergdorf Goodman's many times, if you screamed in the dressing room, whatever was going on would stop. I mean, a million people would come in. So it was really, that was a fake trial too.
And this concerns me. I forget, who was it? Was it Stalin that said, or was it maybe someone from the NKVD, you know, present the man and we'll find the crime, or words to that effect?
Yeah.
You're familiar with that old quote, right? That's
yeah, I'm familiar with the quote. I don't remember who said it, but yes.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, so you're thinking that in spite of his best efforts of the defense attorney, that they're going to snap his head off in one form or another. You think it's just a fait accompli, really?
I think it's much more likely. I think it is, you know, you can never say never. I'm hoping for at least one juror, but maybe the foreman, maybe the guy who reads Daily Mail.
Well, there was one juror, I forget which one it is, though, that said he, you know, if they got news from Truth Social. So you're thinking that one might be a little bit.
Yes.
It could be a Democrat troll. You just never know, right? It's just hard to say.
Well, that's right. Purposely saying that to get on the jury. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, Doctor, I appreciate your insight and also your experience having been on the stand. And so, yeah, we get that. And we pray for justice to be done here rather than lawfare to be performed, which is, I think, currently going on here. And Dr. Carol Lieberman's website, expertwitnessforensicpsychiatrist.com, and you have podcasts, you have all sorts of other things. I'll put all your social media up there and all the links to it, and I appreciate your take, and congratulations on not having to testify this morning. But did they have to pay you anyway? Just curious.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's
see?
The best part.
Great day. It's a great day.
Well,
I got paid and I didn't even have to show up. All right. Have a great one, Doctor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Dr. Carol Lieberman, MD. It is 6:58.